welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. And welcome back to Inspired Island. It's a fun day here in the studio because I have a personal friend in the hot seat. We have Dr. Stephen W. Nurse here. Welcome to Inspired Island, Stephen.
Well, it's good to be here for the last 35 years or so.
And now Steve is a seasoned educator and also an educator of educators. In the past 50 years, he has taught junior high school, numerous 2 and 4 year colleges, and at the Washington State Corrections Center for Women. And since 1971, Steve has been using a wheelchair for mobility, which we'll get into that story soon. Voice of Vashon listeners may recognize Steve's voice from his popular show, Is Abled, the radio show for possibilities, which explores different topics pertinent to various disabilities. Some of his special series include one on service animals, and I'd be remiss if I didn't name his beautiful service dog, Maya, who I'm sure we'll chat about. Thought we could dive right in.
And we maybe not have any time left after the intro there. But I have been out in the island here since 1985, and I built my house out here. And back when property was a lot cheaper, 4 acres for $30,000 sounds pretty nice with a water view. But I've raised 2 kids out here. Jennifer is my oldest, and she's a senior paralegal for an immigration firm downtown. Mm. And my youngest is Lisa, and she's my adventuresome daughter. I remember one time when, for her 16th birthday, she decided to paraglide. And so I'm watching her downtown Seattle go over the top of a ferry boat.
Oh, gosh.
And these two ladies were saying, "Who is that stupid kid up there?" And I said, "Well, that stupid kid is my daughter." But she's always done that. And she has a restaurant consulting firm in San Francisco. And she was even busy during COVID, so that was good. And I have 2 granddaughters, Juniper. Both my daughters are Korean. Both my daughters are adopted. So my daughter Jennifer took part of her first Korean name, mixed it with an American name, and named her daughter Juniper. Her Korean name was Jun Young Lee. And she came at 20 months. Lisa came at 11 months. That was really nice. It's a lot different than, you know, watching your kid come off the international place. That's my kid going down the stairs.
Wow.
Right there. So that was fun.
Yeah. And as an educator, I'm sure the experience of having your own kids and watching them grow up from young ages must have been really awesome, which I'm currently in the middle of that right now. So I've gotten a lot more interested in childhood development and how the brain works.
And you know, I think there's, you know, back when I had kids, the thing was there were several books, you know, Dr. Spock. You read that book, and that was supposed to give you everything you needed to know about raising a child. Well, it didn't even touch the surface. And every child is so unique. And that's what I find when I'm out in the schools.
Yes. So, and what type of child were you?
I was a pretty good kid. I certainly pulled the wool over my parents' eyes plenty. But I think I was a pretty good kid. I was an only child.
Oh, okay.
And I was adopted. And I found out at the age of 50 that I had 2 other biological brothers and 5 half-brothers.
No. Wow. Yeah. How'd you find that out?
I knew that my mother said that I was adopted. She thought she saw the name on the bed. I was adopted at birth.
Ah.
And so I started looking it up. Then I went back in the microfiche in Kittitas County over by Ellensburg and just found just an array of stuff. My biological parents were named Fred and Wilma. So I've met my brothers, and very, very different politically, but my kids could not tell the difference between my brother's, one of my brother's voices and my own.
Oh, wow.
You know.
Yeah.
And he was a police officer down in Portland, and so I do talk to him probably every week or so.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, so interesting to how you know, grow up and have the same, a lot of the same DNA, but such different lives. So.
Yeah, the whole nature versus nurture.
Yeah, that's
tug
right.
Tug of war. Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. But right now I really like to be involved in the schools. And of course you mentioned my lovely dog, Maya.
Yeah.
You know, who sheds probably twice her body weight a day. I have lots of vacuum cleaners full of dog fur. So, but she is my third service dog. And I became involved out at the women's prison at Purdy. I always decide to do something new every year. And so I was very critical of the Department of Corrections. And so I said, the best way to do it is to get involved. They needed someone to volunteer and teach GED classes to the women out there. And I had women from 18 to 65 in my classes. It took me a long time to be accepted out there, because most of the women that are out there have very bad relationships with men. That's a big problem there. A lot of abuse. In fact, I took my daughter out there, Lisa, to go with me and to listen to some of these women's stories. And she was just awestruck by, you know, some of the... And so I've got lots of... I probably know more women that have a felony than most people out there, unless maybe the guards have more, but...
Yeah.
I really like that. I've taught for 50 years or more, and I can't say there's any part of it that I didn't like.
Yeah.
I think those women really appreciated a male that was offering something to them, not trying to take something away.
Absolutely.
You know.
And some of them, depending on their background, may have never had an amazing teacher that really believed in them before.
Yeah, interesting. There is a picture that I have that they've, you don't have a lot of things to work with for supplies, but they had done this big mural on the blackboard in my room that said, "Our favorite teacher," and one of the inmates wrote a song for me, and it was just very touching, you know. They also trusted me to the point where if there was a fight that was getting started in one corner of the room, someone would come to me and say, "Dr. Nurse, you need to look over there." And it was very humbling experience to go behind four locked doors and razor wire to get to your classroom. I taught math and English there. The women really worked hard. The one thing that struck me, I was amazed at all the wasted talent. I mean, I saw women that were just amazing artists, and a woman that was in there for murder that had a voice that you just could not believe. And I was trying to do something with print and different fonts, and one of the women says to me, "Well, I can do that." And it's just, it's, you know, amazing. So I trusted virtually every woman out there. Maybe a couple I didn't want to be around them with sharp objects, but you know, it really is true in life. You respect somebody, they respect you. You know, if you treat other people with kindness, and that's what I tell my student teachers, is that my number one rule is you respect the kids. You say something to a kid that's kind of snarky or very kind of mean, you know, you forget it in 2 seconds. That kid may think about it all day long. Mm. And that's my big thing right now, is trying to think of all the positive things in the world as opposed to all the negative things that we hear on the news.
Yeah. And I love that what you said earlier about how you had a bone to pick with the Department of Corrections and trying to take bad feelings about what's happening in the world and channel that into making positive change wherever you can.
You know, I worked at the Office for Civil Rights and for about 10 years for the Department of Education. And there were some people there that just hated that job. No, I liked it. But, you know, if you don't like a job, you know, when I came back 10 years after I left, it was the same people complaining about the same job. And I always say, you know, do something different. I think the only thing right now, I'm 76 and a half. And I think, in fact, I read that mortality for males is 76 and a half. So I'm on gravy since August 30th. So, but I think the only thing I really regret in my life is I don't have more time to do more things.
Mm.
You know, I was going to go back to school after I got my doctorate in special ed. I was going to go to law school. And my wife felt that wouldn't be a good idea with two kids and working all day and then going to school at night. So,
fair.
And I've never heard anybody say they wish they'd spent less time with their children. And I was lucky because I was around my kids when I was going to school, so I was home quite a bit studying and doing things like that. So, yeah.
Nice. And going back to the education piece, when did you first realize that that was something you were either good at or interested in?
Well, I had a counselor. I was an only child, and so I was always trying to make friends with other people. So I was kind of a jokester. I wasn't much of an athlete. And I remember in my senior year, the counselor, Mr. Carlson, said, "Nurse, whatever you do, don't be a teacher." So that's all I've done for the next 55 years. And that's why I got involved in the, you know, doing the thing with Vietnam was I graduated from Ellensburg in 1966. And that was the major buildup in Vietnam was from 66 to 68 and the Tet Offensive. And there were over, if you think about it, at one time, about 550,000 young American boys. Average age was about 20. And the one question that I asked them that virtually every interviewer said, what was the thing that just surprised you? And they said the heat and the humidity, you know, and the smell of diesel.
Mm.
And these are kids that I bucked bales with in Ellensburg and worked out in the farms. And you see somewhat like one of my friends here on Vashon said, he was in a battle. He was not scarred a bit. But a friend of his stood up next to him and was hit with a grenade and gone. And I know folks, even that graduated with me, almost half of my graduating class of the males went right to Vietnam because they were going to be farmers and work for their parents.
Mm.
You know, I had an educational deferment. You know, I've always told people I always felt bad that I hadn't gone. And there's not one person that says you should have. You know, it's so many people on this island. It just, and one of the interviews that's going to be coming up right now in the next series, it's called Addendum, is with Joe Ulatowski from the island. He served in 4 wars. He was in the very end of World War II at 17 and a half years. He was in Korea. He retired as an admiral. And 4 tours of duty in Vietnam. Was in Vietnam after they did all the getting the MIAs, the missing in action, and trying to do that. And then he served 15 years as an attaché in Russia. And amazing person. He's 96, almost 97.
Wow.
And his wife was in the military, too. And she was in the Beachcomber just last week. His wife had passed away.
Oh.
So, but...
So is that interview already done and you're going to be editing it and putting it up?
It's ready to go. I did about 4 interviews with him. And I also did an interview with another military person from, it was Joe Schweitzer, and he was in the Desert Storm and just talked about, you know, the difference of weaponry. If we could only be as good about curing disease as we could about developing weaponry to kill people. You know, for instance, one of the bombs that was used in Vietnam was called a daisy cluster. And they would drop it to literally clear out an area for an airfield. So it would clear almost 100 yards, take everything off the ground to about 6 inches. But, you know, there are a lot of good people, and I really respect, the one thing I've really learned through all that was really to respect veterans.
Absolutely, yeah.
And one of the, a new series that I'm going to be doing here, I did one on dementia, and now I'm going to work with Brad Tyson. He's a neuropsychologist, and we're going to do one on Parkinson's. And one of the major effects of Agent Orange, which was dropped every place, which was basically had diazinon in it. It was the same thing as Roundup that you spray on your lawn, but it was dumped in barrels. It wasn't orange itself. It was called, there was a label on the barrels that was orange. Mm. But one of the big effects of that was Parkinson's.
Right.
Affecting the neurological system.
Which controls everything.
Yes.
I really love your series because I feel like particularly with the war in Vietnam, a lot of these folks coming home didn't get a hero's welcome with all the tensions that were happening here at home. So I think it must be so challenging to live with the long-lasting impacts, whether it's physical or mental or emotional, and not have that validation. So I love how you're capturing these stories and shining light on these very real experiences that people were living through.
Well, I think that, you know, the interesting thing was, you know, we think of military people as these, you know, G.I. Joe and the gung-ho guys. These were young kids. They hadn't, 3 years earlier, they hadn't planned to go to war. And I think that it's good to tell their stories. And for people to understand, you can't understand. I mean, no one can walk in your shoes, but it's so important to get their point of view out. I think doing a show like your show, Inspired Island, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's inspiring about it is that, you know, these are not the Gandhis. These are not the Mother Teresas. These are average people that made something out of their life, that did something positive. And I just think everybody has that potential.
Mm.
I thought about myself, you know, I mean, and we were going to talk about this, you know. I got married at 23. I had a job. I was a good teacher. My wife, Barbara, was teaching. In fact, I was a student teacher in the school that she was teaching at. That's where I met her. And, you know, we're on our honeymoon taking a trip down to San Francisco in a camper and thinking, you know, we're going to, well, probably just like you, you're a very young person and, you know, going to start a family, going to do all those things. And it just shows me how we better make use of the time that we have, because there are no guarantees in life. None, none, none. And I went, was down there, and I was at my brother-in-law's house in a camper and woke up in the morning and couldn't move. And basically just had a virus in and out, did the damage, and that was it. At that time, they kept people in the hospital for a long time. And I was in the university hospital for 110 days. And I saw people that just gave up. And I thought, I'm not going to do that, you know. I saw a young man who was in a diving accident. He was an orthopedic surgeon and broke his neck. And because he couldn't do orthopedic surgery, he was quadriplegic, he committed suicide. And I just think of the waste. He could have taught, he could have done research, could have done anything. And I just said, you know, to heck with it, I'm going to do the best thing I can. And I've always been a worker, and I love working. But then I, you know, after I was down in California and almost died down there, they flew me up here, and I was even kind of the jokester in the hospital. I kept everybody else going, I think. I remember these little old lady volunteers would come in once a week, and they would say, and they would always be two options, you know. Who wants to play bingo tonight? And then somebody else had the option, who wants to go out for beer and pizza? Well, you know, that was pretty easy choice on that for me. But when I got out, I was actually scared to get out of the hospital, because that was my security at that time. You know, once I got out, I decided, at that time, there was no ADA. I had taught for 1 year, and they weren't going to hire me back. And I could not wait to go back to work. And so I finally went back to the school, and I said, look, let me teach for 2 weeks. No pay. They would never do that anymore. My gosh. And if I work out, then hire me back. If I don't, I'm okay with that. And I did just fine. I love the kids. They were so concerned about the wheelchair. And I had this young girl. Her name was Gina Aversano. And she kept looking at me when I came back to school, kind of in the hallway. And then she would kind of look at me and would never really talk to me. And finally, she came up to me and she said, and this is kind of how kids' minds think. She came up to me and she said, Mr. Nurse, she said, you can't move your legs, can you? I said, no, I can't. She said, well, my mom would sure like to sleep with you. And I said, what? What? She said, yeah, she complains all the time about my dad kicking her at night when he sleeps. So I think it's just interesting how kids look at things.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. No, such a positive experience for those kids, and open their eyes to the fact that people are going through and dealing with all sorts of things.
Sure. And I think that's, as a teacher, that's really an important factor, is as a teacher, you have those kids for 4 to 6 hours a day. They're with somebody else the rest of the 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what baggage they bring with them, whether their parents are getting along, whether they have a step-family situation. I'm not saying that's bad, but I'm just saying they come with a lot of their own thoughts. And I think my kids even did that, you know, to look very different than the other kids in their class. And I think that's, you know, that's caused them to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And build understanding and the empathy muscle and all that. And I'd love to circle back really quickly, because I think it's very notable, is your mindset when you were in the hospital for over 100 days. Did you have moments of like despair and depression, or was it pretty immediate where you decided and stuck to your mindset?
Well, I did for a while. I think the first thing came to my mind was all the 6 words you're not supposed to say on the radio, but we have them written right down here. I can go through those. There was that time. I mean, if you think about it, I was kind of at the prime of my life. 23, just got married to a beautiful woman who I have been married to for 53 years. And probably 48 to 50 of the best years of my life. No, I'm just kidding. One experience that happened to me in the hospital was I actually found out that a lot of the people that wound up in the rehab unit that were paralyzed, like I was, did not stay married for very long. And I actually found out that the folks in rehab at the University of Washington Hospital set up one of the betting squares, and they were betting how long it would be before I was divorced.
No.
And I found out about that. And my wife and I called the head honcho from rehab and the people that were involved. And it was taken care of.
Yeah, I would have lost my mind.
but I was married for 30 days, wound up in the wheelchair and in the hospital, University of Washington Hospital. You know, stupid things, but you have no privacy in a hospital. My wife and I used to, this is so dumb, my wife and I used to go back in the University Hospital where it connects over to the dental lab and go in the elevator and lock it between floors and make out. That was, you know, you kind of do what you need to do in life.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably more information than that.
No, I love that.
Anybody need, but I think, you know, we need to have touch. We need to have closeness. But yeah, I was depressed for a while, but I've always wanted to keep very active, and that's even why I do the Voice of Aishon. You know,
was that part of one of your new things every year?
It was.
Program.
It was. My senior year in high school, I was looking which classes allow me to do the least amount of work so I can get out of here. And so I took Latin from Mr. Mancini, and all I learned was how to say, I learned the Pledge of Allegiance in Latin, and I learned how to say, the sailors go across the river in Latin. Transfluium novego waverunt. But, you know, I had a class that was called Radio Production with Miss Argall. And all we did every year was, I think we did the Christmas Carol at Christmas time. We did some kind of seasonal things. And I was probably not the best student in there either, but I really enjoyed it. And I think if Miss Argall could see me now, she would be very, man, that boy turned out okay. you know. But yeah, one year I decided to learn how to speak Spanish, which was a failure. And but you know, what do we say about you know, Edison tried you know, hundreds of different kinds of elements in his before he got the right ones.
So when did you? You and your wife moved to Vashon Island in the 80s, you said?
Yes.
What was the impetus behind moving here? Like, how did you even learn about Vashon?
Well, living in Ellensburg, all my friends lived in farms and had some property.
Mm.
Before this, I lived in Auburn, and I built a house there. And I had an acre and a half there. And I really liked it, but then they built the freeway, I-5 and a couple exits, and it was just, I got my house broken into a couple times.
Wow.
And in fact, one time when my wife was bringing groceries home and there was somebody in the house, and of course the kids always run in first, and that was really scary. But so I moved, I wanted someplace quieter. We came out here, someone told us about some property, and you know, I wanted an island that had good ferry service.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Was it good back then?
It was, and it was, and round trip, I think, was about $4.50.
Wow, yeah.
So, you know, of course, that was back in the, you know, that's like when I was a boy, you know, I bought a Hershey candy bar for 5 cents, you know, so. But so we rented out here. In fact, I rented in this old house that was just had cracks in the windows. I was so cold all the time. The dog and I fought over who got to be close to the wood stove. And so it took us a year to build a house out here and had the property and really liked it. Something very unique about Vashon. One of the things that was really nice was a friend of mine, Steve Ice, who has a visual impairment. I contacted a guy at King County building a land and had him walk all over the town with us and made recommendations to where they should put in sidewalks and stuff.
Mm.
And I found out that when they put this plan together, 2 years later, I hadn't heard anything, but they'd put a lot of those recommendations in.
Oh, good.
So that's, you know, I always say the most accessible places are the places that don't look accessible.
Hmm. What do you mean?
If they have a big ramp up there to them that winds back 4 or 5 times, you think, well, maybe I should put a ramp in here. Because but so I think that that's really important. I also think one of the things that I work with is the things that are, you start relying on electric doors, you start relying on those kinds of things rather than looking for alternatives. You know, if the power goes out, you lose the electric door.
Mm,
you know, there's
right.
Very few that have backup systems. And most of the buildings now, in the new buildings, they build a system, HVAC system, that actually sucks in. So, in other words, to pull the door open, they're airtight, and to pull the door open, it's much harder. So what you can do is you can have sometimes a little plunger that'll release pressure on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how would you rate Vashon in terms of accessibility? Do you find it's pretty ADA friendly around here?
I would say it's pretty horrible.
Uh-oh.
Let me just give, you know, if people would just ask, I don't think people do things to say, let's see if we can mess up somebody with a disability.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But let me give you an example, because this really doesn't reflect on anybody. They put a wheelchair accessible place in at the post office. It is, you could not, if you had said, where is the worst place I could put this? That's where it is.
Mm.
I have a van with a lift on it. And if you pull into the place, with a car or a van, you block the sidewalk. You block the ramp. The side that is supposed to be where you have the dead space, the crosshatch paint, should be on the passenger side. That's on the other side. And if I'm in my Lyft, where do I drop out? I drop right out into the lane of travel. People come around there to drop mail off, and they have the outside mailbox. And so it's an accident waiting to happen. But somebody didn't ask, you know.
Right. Nor do any, like, test runs.
Yeah. So, and I think there's a lot of work that's going to be done with sidewalks as we get more people here.
Right.
Which will happen. The sidewalk would be on the north side of Thriftway. There really isn't any sidewalk. There needs to be a sidewalk probably also over there by the post office so people can get around. There's even one building here in town that I'm sure has not got a permit for it because they have built an outside eating area right over the wheelchair ramp. That's a good uh-oh. Yeah. You know, another thing we're working with are all the sandwich signs.
Yeah.
Where do they set them all? Right at the top of the curb ramp, right at the corner, at the four corners.
Right.
You know, and they get bumped and knocked over and, you know.
Yeah, it's not a good situation.
And so, but what's the solution? You know, somebody said, well, they should put up a reader board or something, you know, like a electronic. Well, let's say that you got a reader board. It's advertising all these different places. What's somebody going to do? They're going to come to the four-way stop to sit there and stare at the reader board.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what you want them to do either. So.
Yeah, well, there's got to be some sort of creative solution. Yeah. So I hope everybody listening to this, we all, you know, put on our lookout eyes and try to find small things, like subtle things that I'm sure every day, you know, people are walking by and including me, not thinking about. So I think we could all be doing a better job of.
It is interesting because, you know, somebody will say to me, I'll say, is your place accessible? Oh yeah, it only has one step. Well,
well, you know, that's one step too many.
one or 20 doesn't make a whole lot of difference. So
you're talking about your granddaughters.
Granddaughters, yes. My oldest is 11, going on 16. My youngest, her mother is from Pakistan, and her father is Caucasian, and they named her Zara, Z-A-R-A. Mother's name is Lubna, Lubna. So, but she's just a real, real pip. And she's, you know, she's kind of at that age where one of the first words they learn is no. And, but she's really, really fun to be around. Oh, and she loves Maya.
Oh.
You know, and Maya is so good with her. She likes to throw the ball, which maybe is 2 feet. But
Maya probably is entertained by it all.
And she calls coming out to our house, coming out to the park. It's kind of the same thing. So they live up in Magnolia. So yeah, that's kind of me, and that's my family. And
I love that.
I like being here. I could not ask for a better wife in the world. That's the one thing that's kind of really nice. As you get older like me, is you've always got somebody you can rely on and someone, you know, that loves you and cares about you and is with you. And I think that's the key.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
She sure put up with a lot with me going to school and working, you know, 20 hours a day and doing all that stuff. She used to always say, with my kids, you know, I'd be working something on my dissertation, and my wife would finally say, Steve, did you know that that the girls are asking you something and I'm just
in the zone.
I'm just zoned out, you know. But there's a lot of things I'd still like to be. I'd like to be a bartender. I think it'd be fun. I sang two songs in a band one time. Oh, I think my new thing this year, I'm going to do my audition on Saturday for there's an open audition for Drama Doc and for all those.
And for shows next year?
Yeah, for
Very
shows next
cool.
year.
Very cool.
And that was another thing that I did one year. I had never been in a play before in my life, and I was probably 45, and I started auditioning for plays and got a major part in a play downtown at the Ethnic Theater, and I actually got paid as an actor.
Wow.
One play.
A paid
play.
Actor. There we
so
go.
I'm gonna, you know, what the heck?
Yeah.
You know, the worst thing. I love to sing a song at the Coop sometimes, so, you know.
There we go.
You know, maybe I'll hit it. Maybe I'll be another Macklemore or something. I don't know.
There we go. Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you what's inspiring you these days, and it sounds like you've got a lot on the horizon.
I think just doing something different every day. And, you know, I used to get up in the morning and kind of worry about the day and what am I going to do? And, and then I would think I've got all this stuff to do. And then it seemed like I could get it done in 30 minutes, you know, and then, but I like to keep active. I like to meet new people. I mean, I become really good friends with the bread man, you know. And I mean, he's a younger guy, but we get together a lot. And he must not mind old people. I think I'm still pretty hip, you know.
I would concur. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of like, I remember when I had kids, you know, and I first had kids, I thought, man, I am going to be the coolest parent around. I know all the music. I got a good stereo system, you know. And then they get to be in 10 years old or 12 years old, and they start, I don't even know the name of any of these groups, you know. You know, I was one of myself and probably 20,000 screaming teenagers. I took my daughters to New Kids on the Block.
Ooh,
at the Kingdom.
Ooh, you are a cool dad.
Yeah, and well, and with it was all mothers. I mean, I got almost all mothers. And I've been to Tiffany.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was another one. And Janet Jackson, when she was doing the thing with the clanking around in the old warehouse, you know, she had all this, she wore the kind of military uniform and
iconic.
did that down at the Tacoma Dome. But yeah, and I did all my shopping for all my girls every year for Christmas.
Mm.
Now Christmas and school year. So I loved it. Mom was much more practical than I was. Who do you want to go shopping with? Mom or dad? Dad. He's a pushover, you know.
Well, it makes for some good memories, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Nurse, we end every show with a fun lightning round of questions just to get to know you a little bit more.
The lightning round.
Yes. Are you ready?
It sounds like yes. That's sure.
So the first question is, do you have a favorite beverage here on Vashon?
I would say my favorite beverage on Vashon would be anything at the Eagles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A lot of people go there, have a great breakfast on Sunday.
There we go.
And inexpensive.
Yes. Love it.
A lot of good places on Vashon.
Love it. If you're not at home or work, where can people most often find you on the island? Like, do you have any favorite spots?
Probably Cafe Luna.
It's a good one.
And that's probably the rest, 90% of the people here, that's where they go to talk.
It's so cozy.
It is.
And do you have any pet peeves about island living?
People that complain about people blocking the aisles at Thriftway. That's where you meet everybody, and you know, You know, you have no anonymity in Thriftway.
Absolutely not.
You know? And you don't go to Thriftway just to pick up one or two things. You go to pick up one or two things and talk to 10 people that you've run into. Yeah.
It's the epicenter of community and run-ins, the grocery stores.
In fact, one thing that somebody asked me, I was going to the Vashon Healthcare District meeting.
Oh, right.
And they were trying to figure out how more people should come to their meetings and their board meetings. And I said, just meet at the deli section on Thriftway. You know, you'll get 15, 20 people easy. So.
Good idea. And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
Waiting in line at a ferry. this is getting to be a more regular tradition, too. We have it 365 days a year.
Absolutely. I haven't heard that one as a favorite, but...
Well, yeah. A little facetious.
And where can people find you to learn more about you and your work?
Well, I'm on the city council. They can see me with the board there. I also, my consulting firm, it's disability-access.org. And that's where I do my ADA counseling and consulting. Work a lot with school districts and colleges, but private places too. We've even offered to people on Vashon, if they want to have access, we're not so mercenary that we won't help them. And lady who has a business in her house, we went over there and figured out how to put a ramp into her house, and it's a gorgeous ramp. So, you know, willing to do that. Like to help people. Also, I have a van with a wheelchair lift, and people have called me up and need a ride someplace, to a wedding or anything, in a wheelchair. So I'm willing to do that if I've got the time.
I love that. And you can also find Dr. Nurse on Voice of Vashon.
Yeah, I do like, this got me through COVID. This and a dog. You know.
Good combo.
It is. They say, you know, if you locked your dog and your significant other in the trunk of your car for a half a day, who would be happy to see you? And I think that's, you know, that's Maya, you know.
Yeah.
Maya knows all the FedEx guys. And knows which one have the bones.
Oh.
She knows that she doesn't care which bank gives you the best interest, but she knows PSCCU has dog bones at the desk. So, you know, that's good.
She appreciates that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Steve. This has been a real treat. And it was a long interview, but not long enough. I could chat with you for hours.
It's kind of fun, isn't it?
Yes.
You could tell I was a professor.
I love that. And thank you for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 FM LP. Until next time, stay inspired.